Ooh, baby. My name is Margaretta, and I am a grateful alcoholic. Y'all look good. Y'all look real good. Y'all don't look like you used to be, you know. But I know you used to be. I'm very happy to be here, very grateful. I like to just take a moment just to be still and ask my higher power to come and work in and through me so I can speak his words and not mine. I pray to my higher power that I won't get up here and start doing my performance and that he will speak his words. So I'm very, I try to be in touch with that now because, you know, I don't want to be it anymore. I really don't. I want to be a representative of my higher power, not a representative of Margaretta. So I'm very grateful. I want to thank Gopher State. I mean, this is fabulous. This is really overwhelming. I'm really trying to be composed because I've just been so emotionally spent behind the whole weekend. You know, just to be a part of this, just to be around all of y'all is, you know, when the big book talks about this is a journey you won't want to miss, this is a journey we ought not ever miss. I mean, if I had not been a drunk and been saved by Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know where I would be, what would be going on. But here I am today, through the grace of God, cleaned up differently from how I was a little while ago, and very grateful for it. I want to thank my host. My host is Brian. Where's Brian? Brian. There's Brian. Brian and Karen. He picked me up in the airport, took good care of me, the husband, and the two grandkids, and I'm very grateful for that. I also want to thank Nancy. Nancy, you've been doing good work, sister. Thank you for all the calls and just the support and the entire executive committee. All of y'all, thank you. And I also want to thank a friend of mine, Cookie. Cookie was my host when I was here last year at the Women's to Woman, and I got up here and forgot to even thank her. You know, I got so self-involved, I forgot. And I want to say thank you for all the love, because, see, I know today that I don't do any of this by myself. So, you know, it's always an attitude. I try to have an attitude of gratitude. And many times it's difficult, but I'm trying to be more mindful of people and mindful of trying to build friendships and maintain friendships. So that's all that out the way. And when I got here, I was so tired. Oh, God, I was so tired. I was like, oh, my God, I need to be in a rest home. I am tired. I was so tired I couldn't even introduce last night's speaker. I was tired. You know, and I needed to get rest, and that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me. Nancy reminded me, and the people were very considerate. They said, you know, I know you've been up for a lot of hours. Would you like to probably consider resting instead? You know, they have to, you know, you have to be gentle with an alcoholic. You know, we're very sensitive, and you have to present things ever so gently, because you know we get resentments and we get sick so quickly, at least I do. So thank you, Gopher State, for all your loving concern, and I did rest, and I've still been resting. It's been really, I've been really having some good times over the last several weeks. A lot of good things have been happening in my life, and next week I'll be graduating with my master's, and that's through the Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm telling you guys, I ain't lying. All I did was show up. I just kept showing up. I was like, when are they going to find out? I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but I'm showing up. I'm showing up, and I'm an example of just show up and things change and things get better. I always like to say, oh, where's my husband? Husband, where are you? Hey, husband. Okay, we'll get to him later. Okay. Oh, wow, what a journey. Thank you, baby. Thank you for all the years. Thank you for the support. Thank you for loving me when I felt like I didn't want to love you. Thank you for not wanting to leave when I wanted you to leave. And I thank God that when you wanted to move, I didn't, you know, it always worked out. You know, as long as somebody's on a different page, you know, you can stay together, okay? I always like to say that I wasn't a falling down drunk, but I was starting to do some mighty strange things standing up, okay? I was the black Marilyn Monroe type. Yeah, baby. Hot, steamy, voluptuous, crazy. The only thing that mattered to me was what I thought you thought about me. Everything was about the outer shell. As long as I could look like I had it together, that was all that mattered. It didn't matter that my insides were always on fire, that I didn't understand what was going on in my life. The only thing that mattered is when I walked out that house, everything was smoking and cooking. And I needed every man to turn around and say, "Ooh, baby, get it." Now, you know, you're sick when you're like that. I needed so much attention, but I didn't even understand that. I was not my friend. And as a result of that, I had a lot of problems because I never knew how to get along with me. But I've come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and y'all have introduced me to me. And a day at a time, my God, what a journey it's been. Oh, by the way, my sobriety date, in case you're interested, is June 5th, 1987. So if God... Alcoholics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous. My home group is the St. Nicholas Group of AA in New York City in Harlem. It is the oldest group in Harlem with 61 years old. And anytime you're in New York, come on up to Harlem and visit with us. We'd love to have you. And it's the home group that has given me the love, that has nurtured me, that has had me showing up all these years in order that I can be here today with some semblance of sanity and some peace inside my soul, and I'm very grateful for that. You know, we always say if you don't have a home group, you're homeless. So if you don't have a home group, please get a home group right away, okay? And don't forget to make those business meetings. Gotta make them business meetings, you know. You know, it's funny. When I used to, you know, like a few years ago, I find that my sharing is, as I keep coming, the essence of it is changing. As I'm changing, my sharing is changing. My, I guess that's natural that as you change, everything about you will change. How you present, how you think, things begin to change. And I find now that, and I really didn't want to do it, to be honest, at some times, because I was like, I don't know if I feel like being honest right now. I got a lot going on. Because you know, when you get up here, you got to tell it. You got to tell it. You got to let it out, because you can't get up here and fake it. And, you know, the road over the last year, let me get the little stuff out the way, had been very painful. I had gone through a lot of emotional upheaval. It really rocked my boat. I was thinking, my God, do I need a stint in the nut house? I mean, I'm getting a little nutty here. You know, I'm feeling a little crazy. But you know what? When the higher power is ready to shake you and get you moving, he'll shake you, and you don't know how he's going to shake you. And the higher power was shaking me, trying to get my attention on some things, and I didn't want to listen. And so he shook me some more, knocked me upside my head, did a whole lot of stuff to me. And finally, I was like, okay, God, you got it. And once I got to that, oh, my God, yes, God, you got it, then the peace begins to come back. You know, why I struggle or why we as alcoholics struggle so much, I think that's part of the disease of alcoholism. But I was struggling with some things because I had taken over, of course. You know, I was doing my thing, and I wasn't doing the higher powers work, and the result was is that I had become dis-at-ease with myself. But see, no matter what, I always make meetings. I kept coming back. I kept making meetings and talking about what I was going through until I talked it through, worked it through, and then, you know, the peace that passes all understanding comes. So it's been... if I really look at it, it's been really great because the higher power has revealed more of me to me. And I believe that's what it's all about, finding out more about myself. Because, baby, I didn't know nothing about myself before I got here except to look very sexy and to get on top of some table and start taking my clothes off or something like that. You know, I was very expressive. Very interpretive. I was an actress in my own mind, you know, just always performing to some skit, you know, how I think I'm supposed to perform for the public. Everything was a grand thing with me, you know, and even when I, the way I dressed, and you know, we have three children, and I remember when the children were younger and trying to go to PTA with my, you know, with all this bubbling out and, oh, God. I always showed up overdone. You know what I mean? I was always overdone. I was always steamy and you know, many times quite inappropriate for the situation, you know. And I've come in here and you have cleaned me up quite nicely, you know, and I'm very grateful for that. But I had a lot of problems in my life and I didn't even know it. You know, even as a child, I didn't recognize that, you know, I had so much fear inside of me. So much fear, and this just carried on and on, but I was a secretive type of alcoholic, and all my feelings were always held inside of me. I never was the type to, I didn't know how to talk about it. We didn't talk about feelings. I didn't know what these feelings were. I couldn't articulate what was happening with me because I really didn't know. So what I would do was just keep moving on. And what I kept doing was I kept moving on in the wrong direction. But when I found alcohol and drugs, and, well, let me just say, you know, we can't be high and sober at the same time. But when I found alcohol and I got that sense of ease and comfort that comes from taking that first one, I knew I was home. You know, it just kind of like makes you feel all warm inside. And then I'm able to like really be. But if I didn't have anything in me, I could not go out. I could not be who I thought I was supposed to be. I would hide out in my apartment. I would hide out with myself because the disease of alcoholism is so cunning. I couldn't live with it. I couldn't live without it. But I've come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and you have helped me find out who I am. Now, let me just tell you how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous with all this trouble in my life. I had one of these jobs where if something happened, you have to give up some urine. You know what I'm saying? One of these blood out. Oh, God. It's a horrible job for an alcoholic to have, right? So how I handled it was I would carry my daughter's urine in my bag just to make sure I had some clean urine in case I needed some urine. And a lot of times I would forget to change it and it would spill in the bag. You know, we go deep now, you know that. I wanted to keep the job, but I didn't want to stop doing what I was doing. And, you know, we have two sons and a daughter, and I would only use my daughter's urine because I thought science and technology could determine if it was a male urine or female urine, you know. So that's how I operated, you know. But I always, you know, but I always showed up with my smile and, you know, faking it, being charming, trying to hide the disease of alcoholism. So, you know, many times I tried to pull the wool over many people's eyes, but mainly I was pulling it over my own. But finally, you know, your record speaks for yourself. And finally, I had built up a nice little record for myself on this job. I was AWOL, I was late, you know, I was killing off relatives. And, you know, the word was out, watch out for her, you know. And some people had warned me that I was being watched. And this is what's so cunning about the disease. Even though I knew and I had been told that I was being watched, I couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't stop drinking. I couldn't stop doing what I was doing because I couldn't live without alcohol. And so finally, they came one day and they took me out of service and they said, we want you to come on down and we want to talk to you. I went on down to the headquarters and they talked to me, blah, 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 blah. And then they said, do you have a problem with drinking? I said, oh, no, 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 no. See, I couldn't be honest, but I really didn't think until I got to AA, really got in AA, that I had a problem with alcohol because I didn't like to drink as soon as I got up. My husband liked to drink when he first got up, so I didn't think I had a problem with alcohol. And see, he shook. I didn't shake. I was too cool to shake. I ain't shake. Uh-uh. So I didn't think I had a problem with alcohol. I thought I had a problem with other things because what I would like to do is first get that other chemistry set going, get that all swirled around inside of me, and then I would want to start drinking. So I didn't think I had a problem with alcohol. So I was still dishonest. I said, no. And they said, okay. They said, we want some urine from you today. I said, uh-oh, I don't have no urine in my bag today. And I knew this was going to be a problem. So I said, you know, the old alcoholic mind went into gear. And I, you know, I wasn't supposed to leave that headquarters, but I was able to talk my way out. And I left there. I said, I'll be right back. And they let me go. They let me run this string. And I'm grateful the way the higher power let it run. And so I ran out of that place. It was in Brooklyn, and my daughter was in school in Manhattan. I shot out of that place. I ran into Manhattan. I took my daughter out of her class. I took her into the bathroom and said, give mommy some pee. Now, this is, without a shadow of a doubt, the disease of alcoholism. I was that sick and didn't know I was that sick. And I remember my daughter was saying, Mommy, why you always want my pee? Just give me some pee. And so I got this clean urine, and I head on back to the headquarters. And when I get there, you know, okay, the nurse comes in the bathroom with you. I'm used to that. That's no problem. But when I walked in that bathroom, I was shocked. They had changed the format. Now they had taken all the doors off the stalls. I couldn't manipulate the urine. I had to give them my urine, and I knew I was busted. I knew I was busted, and it was just going to be a matter of a couple of days before they came, and they took me out of service, and they did. I was humiliated and embarrassed. And they said, okay, you are suspended pending dismissal. And I remember that day when it happened and I went on home and they stripped me of everything and sent me on my way. And I remember feeling like, oh my God, what am I gonna do? I was so embarrassed. I couldn't tell anyone. Only person I told was my husband. And so I didn't do anything about it. I had an opportunity to do something about my drinking at that time, but I couldn't do anything because I couldn't fathom how do you function without a drink? How do you get up? How do you clean? How do you cook? How do you make love? How do you do anything without something inside of you? And the reality was I hadn't cleaned that house in a long time. I might have been making a lot of noise, but I was not making love, okay? Nothing was working in my life, but the disease of alcoholism had fooled me into believing that it was helping me function, and I wasn't functioning at all. I was just existing. I was just moving from one spot to the other, being an embarrassment, not being available for my children. You know, not being there. I was the type of drunk who snuck out of my own house and snuck back in. You know what I mean? And this was going on. And I remember I sat down when this happened, I sat on that old, dirty, funky couch, because you know I ain't cleaning. But I was the type of drunk when family had to come or some event had to, was coming up, and, you know, I had to have guests. I would get that Superwoman cape on and get every, push you, yeah, somebody know what I'm talking about, and push everything in the closets and under the beds and then put my look on and then go to the door and say, enter, you know, like, I was full of crap. I've always been a performer, you know, I can perform to the crowd, you know, I can make things look good on the surface while I'm dying on the inside, and I have to be careful with that even in recovery. I have to keep removing those layers of onion that are still injurious to me. And so I sat on this couch for about 3 months, and the job contacted me by telegram and told me to, you know, I have one more chance to get my butt in there. And I got all dolled up in my black Marilyn Monroe look. Because, see, I was the black Marilyn Monroe type. So I got all dolled up in my look, and I headed on down to the EAP, Employees Assistance Program, that I had been needed. And so I get down there. And this woman counselor takes me into her office, sits me down, and the first thing she said to me, she looked me right in my face, and she said, she said, look at all that pain. She saw the pain, and the tears just start flowing. It was the first time that somebody saw my pain, and the way she said it, she evoked the emotions that were there, and it just started coming out. Oh, God, it started coming out. And next day, I was in the detox, 7-day detox. But I took all my black Marilyn Monroe clothes with me, you know, to detox. Ah, got to have your look going on in detox, you know. Hey! Don't leave your look, baby, no matter where you go. Finally, after a couple of days, my sister had to bring me some appropriate detox clothing, you know. Because I had my fishnet stockings, I had my stilettos, I had my micro minis, you know. And back then, I was wearing long, false fingernails. Gotta have your look going on, right? And, you know, when I took my glue to detox. And when they checked me and they took my glue, I said, oh, God, they took my glue. And so, as the nails begun to drop off, as they do, I began to put Band-Aids around my nails to hold them on. So towards the end, all my nails had Band-Aids on them, you know. Because, you know, it's about the look. So I'm in detox with my fingernails painted on. I mean, with Band-Aids, it was just, oh, but I was there. I was there, and that's the only thing that mattered, and you all brought the message. This is why it's so important that we show up and do the service, because where would I be if people like you hadn't come into that detox and brought the message of hope? And I was ready. It's something about when you're ready. I was as ready as only the dying can be when you're ready. I was so ready. I was so sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was tired. You know, that kind of tired that's all down in the marrow of your bone? I was so tired. I was getting old, and I knew I was dying. I could feel death creeping up on me. And so I was willing. I went into that detox. Y'all came in. I heard the message. And it's been one day at a time ever since. And not without trials and tribulations. You know, when I was out there, you know, the disease is so cunning. I remember, you know, talking about that image. You know, I had a little stint when I was a interpretive dancer, let's say. You know what I mean? Expressionism. I was expressing myself on top of the table. It was magnificent, though. And I had a fur coat. I looked good in fur, and I looked good in stiletto heels, right? And I would walk into these gigs with my fur coat and my stiletto heels and the New York Times under my arm. I wasn't reading it. But it was a fabulous prop. I love props. I'm a propper. So I would have the paper under my arm and walk into these places like, I don't really belong here. I'm just here, but I'm not really one of y'all. I'm just here. I'm just passing through. See how sick I was, you know? And that sort of thing was going on in my life. Such denial, such, you know, I can be better than or less than depending on the situation, but I could never be honest and I could never be real until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And see, I know God has been watching over me all these years. Number one, I'm still alive. All the places I've been and the things that happened to me, and I'm alive. And my husband didn't kill me. I'm alive. You know, God gives us exactly what we need. God gave me a wonderful, wonderful husband who was patient and tolerant of many of my insane moments because some men might have killed me. So I'm very, very grateful. So, baby, right on. Right on. Thank you. Thank you. And so a lot of things were happening to me. But when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, the husband was still drinking. So what happened was, after a couple of years, I said, you got to go. And besides, I always thought I wanted a fresh one anyway, because, you know, I'm that type of drunk, you know. I want a fresh husband, so let him go. But God has other plans, I'm telling you. You want to really be shocked and really have a wonderful journey, stick with God. He will give us a journey that we can never fathom. That his journey is the most magnificent journey I have encountered since I've been here. So I've come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm trying to do life on life's terms. The husband is doing what he has to do. I'm here, you know, I'm out there trying to do what I have to do with the three children, you know, and trying to work and trying to do the right thing. And, you know, my God, a lot of things began to happen. And they weren't all pleasant. But they were necessary in order for me to grow and to find out more about me. My first sponsor was Barbara R. Barbara was fabulous. She was great with newcomers. She was the type who would drag you around everywhere and tell you what to do. I couldn't stand that part, though. She was too bossy. I didn't like it. She was too bossy. But she was wonderful, and I knew she loved me. And I didn't even like Barbara that much, and it shows you something. I didn't like her, but I knew I needed her, and she helped me to stay sober. And then I got this other sponsor, Peggy. Peggy S., who lives in Florida now. And I'm telling you, Peggy, she was something else. Soon as I came in, after a while, she grabbed me. She said, get her quick. She used to say, get away from her, get away from her, leave her alone. Don't you know she's a newcomer? See, you had to help protect me because I didn't understand me. And so they would say, listen, Peggy would say, listen, Margaretta, if you're going to make a name for yourself in AA, let it be a good one. And she said, whatever you were doing out there, don't bring it in here. And she was the woman who sparked my imagination, who sparked my spirit, and I really wanted to begin to change. And Peggy loved me unconditionally. I could call her at any time and talk about what I was feeling, the fears and the anxiety that was going on with me, and she would just work with me. The love that we have in this room is phenomenal. The love that we give one another, the patience that we give one another is something else. People who get out their bed and come nurture you. People who walk and talk with you. It's just a journey that is just, it's God-given. It's just God-given. And so Peggy, but she retired, she moved to Florida, and then I got the sponsor that I have now, that I've been having now for about 16 years, Gene H. from the St. Albans Group in Queens in New York City. And Gene, I mean, for those of us who've had good sponsors and really been sponsored, and I mean sponsored, we are so blessed. Gene sponsored me. He sponsored me through the 12 steps and 12 traditions. And he taught me, he said, Margaretta, your problem, like my problem, the problem of the alcoholic is the problem with self. He said, it's not people, places, and things. You got to learn about you. And he taught me that the disease of alcoholism centers mainly in my mind. It's my thinking. It's my stinking thinking. And I began the journey of trying to not be an enemy to myself. And it's very easy for me to be an enemy to me. And so I came in here, and y'all start teaching me, I can't afford resentments. I can't stand that. I can't afford resentments. And the only person I can think about is me. And I didn't understand that because when I was out there, I mean, you put the blame wherever the blame had to be. You did whatever you had to do. But I came into AA, and y'all taught me that I'm powerless over alcohol, that I can't, and my life was unmanageable, and I know my life is unmanageable because I ain't pay no rent until I had to. The phone was always cut off. There was a whole lot of things going on in my life that showed me that I was totally unmanageable. And then y'all told me that I needed this power greater than myself to restore me to sanity. And I didn't do no praying much when I was out there. I just couldn't. I was angry with God, and I didn't even recognize that I was angry with God. And you know what? It's interesting to me tonight that, you know, my energy, where I feel my energy, where my energy is going. And I recognize that I needed this higher power. And lately, like I said, more and more I've been drawn and drawn to this higher power because I've been so sick. I think I heard this guy at a convention. He said, "I hope you all stay here long enough to find out how sick you really are." And see, I understand that. With 19 years, I began to see how sick I really was. And I was like, my God, could it really be like that? And yeah, it could really be like that, and you can really get better also. And so I recognized that I needed to take this inventory because Gene said so. And y'all have been saying that if I take this inventory, I'm going to find out more about me. And the more I find out about me, the more effective I'm going to be with my life and with you. And so I took this inventory, and I found out some things about me that were not pretty. I found out how self-absorbed, I've always been self-absorbed, and I just didn't know it. And you know how I even know I'm self-absorbed now? I got three closets stuffed with clothes, just stuffed. See, I can tell how sick I am by how much stuff I have in my house. See, stuff for me equals sickness. The more stuff I have, the sicker I am. Because, yeah, somebody know what I'm talking about? Because after I stopped drinking, I started shopping. After I stopped shopping, I started eating. After I stopped eating, I went back to shopping. You know, there's something. There's always something that's going on, anything to keep me from looking at me. And then I had to come in here and find out that I was still not free. Because I was still running to something to get out of me. I still wasn't sitting still and dealing. I was running here and running there and doing this and doing that, but I wasn't free. And in between the interim when the husband and I weren't together because, you know, he was still working on his story, you know, I tried to date. Oh, God, that was horrible. Dating has never been a good piece for me. And I remember as I began to date, and I went and I redecorated my house, of course, fabulously. Oh, God, it was so fabulous. Really what it was a trap, okay? And I remember once I had this date come by for dinner, you know, a potential. And this potential passed by the bedroom and said, "Oh, my God, this is a trap." You see, I'm the type of alcoholic that everything on the surface has to look fabulous. I love fabulous, just fabulous stuff, right? Always overboard sort of stuff. And I came in here and I began to see how I was getting better. I wasn't drinking, no doubt about that. Things were happening, but I still had a long way to go. And, you know, when we're honest with ourselves, we can see these things. We can begin to see them. So, you know, I'm trying to date. That's not working out. And I don't know what to do about it. You know, and I went through this long period, and I started getting agitated. I'm like, "Oh, God." And I started crying to God. "Oh, God, help me. God, when am I going to get a man again? Oh, God, please give me a man again. Please, God, will I have sex again in the 80s? Will I have sex in the 90s, God? When will I have sex again, God? Please, God, I need some sex. Come on, God. What's happening? I'm fabulous. I don't have no man." You know, it's hard when you're fabulous and you ain't got no man. That shit's hard. It's difficult. And I was like, oh, God. And so, but what I did do, I kept going back to school. I kept, you know, moving around in the job. I kept working with the children. I kept coming to meetings. I kept doing service, you know, kept doing things like that. And next thing I know, you know, a decade has passed by. You know, I still ain't got no man. But I got stuff. So finally, I'm like, what's going on here? Something's not right. So finally, see, God has such a sense of humor. By then, the husband has come into AA, and now he's working his program, and we're good friends. You know, we never fell out of being friends because we have our children and our grandchildren. But, you know, I said, I don't want him anymore. Shit, I want a new one. So, you know, I wasn't looking his way. I was like, we're friends. We're working with our children, you know, but we were always together. But I couldn't see that. I couldn't see that we were always in each other's company, but we weren't together. So I was confused. And finally, one day, I think I listened to the higher power. And the higher power said, fool, I gave you your man. I said, God, I ain't asked you for that man. I don't want that man. Now, God, I done told you. I want, you know, one for every day. And, you know, I was, oh, God, you know, I had my fantasy going. You know, but you know what's interesting about the fantasy? I had the fantasy going, but I couldn't bring it into reality because Alcoholics Anonymous had gotten to me. I was still thinking about what I wanted to do, how I wanted to do it. I still wanted to be like a jet setter, fabulous, different men, you know, just doing my thing. But it didn't work. And I couldn't figure out, well, why isn't it working? Because it wasn't meant to work. You can't operate like that. And I remember once this other gentleman I had seen for a very short period, because they were all like short period stints, and then I was like, I could wake up real quick and like, oh, no, I don't want to be here. And I remember once seeing one of the guys that I had met not too long ago, a couple of years ago, really, and he said, how you doing? A few years ago, more than two. And he said, are you married yet? I said, no. And he said, I know what it is with you. You still want to be a player. And you know what? He was right. I still fancied myself a player, but it wasn't working because I had changed without recognizing the change that I had made. And so I struggled for a long time. Do I want to, you know, what do I want to do? Who do I want to be with? How is this going to work? But I'm telling you, when you're confused, just keep coming. Whatever you're confused about, just don't drink and keep coming. And in time, you'll figure it out, or it will be presented to you in such a way that you have to say, oh, I got it. Oh, that's it. Oh, I didn't know. I didn't see it. Oh, God. But we've been telling you for a long time, Margaretta, but I didn't know. Everybody was saying, what's wrong with your husband? How come you're not with him? He's a nice guy. But you just don't understand. I don't, you know, I don't want to. And then finally, one day, I saw him again. I mean, I really saw him. I was like, oh, I got a man. So we got back together, you know, and it's been a day at a time. But it hasn't been without its ups and downs. I will not tell you it has been smooth on my part. He's cool in the game. He's just waiting for me to catch up. I fight. I struggle because I still don't know how to always accept goodness in my life. Y'all have had to teach me how to receive. I've been so used to injurious behavior and just trudging along that I forgot that there's joy, That I'm not supposed to just trudge all the time, that there should be some peace that passes all understanding. And so I surrendered. And when I surrendered, I got the peace that passes all understanding. Now, I would like to say that that peace stays with me all the time. It does not, because I still struggle. And I allowed myself several months ago to get very sick in my head. I had taken my will back. I had decided again, I want another one. I don't want to be married. I want a fresh husband. I don't want to do this no more. I don't want to play anymore, because I'm the type, I don't want to play anymore. I pick up my marbles. I want to go, okay? And I got very sick, and I got very angry. And I started shutting down. I forgot how to share. I forgot how to talk. And I got very sick inside of my soul. And one day, I got so angry that I threw a jar of hair grease across the room at him, missed him, of course, busted up my chandelier, and I knew that I was sick. And I said, oh, my God, what am I not letting go and letting God with? What's going on with me? More work, more work, more work. More as we keep coming, more comes to the surface. I have been stuffing a lot of feelings. I hadn't been honest in a lot of areas that I needed to be honest in, and they exploded. So please, whatever you're going through, keep talking. When I first came around, I talked about everything all the time. I got a little bit of time, and I began to like, I really don't have to talk about that. I really don't have to talk about that. I understand that. I intellectualized it. I did a Freudian analysis on myself. Dangerous. And I got sick. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm sick again. And so I began to slowly begin to do the work that's really required. Because, you know, we can still make meetings and still be very sick. I wasn't sharing at gut level like I needed to. And so I'm here to say that it's been a very painful journey. Very painful. And I got scared. And it was very interesting the day that I threw the jar of hair grease across the floor. After I busted up the chandelier and all the glasses all over the place, I said, let's make a meeting. And we went and made a meeting. That's AA. We recover very quickly when we find ourselves in dangerous situations. And I got scared. I said, oh, my God. Do you know I could actually end up in jail in recovery? Do you know I could actually kill somebody in recovery? And that scared me. I was very frightened by what I had done, frightened enough to get honest again. So the work is always ongoing, ongoing, ongoing. And the Big Book talks about, you know, the more we keep coming, the more we'll come to the surface, and the more that we'll find out about ourselves. And so I'm not here to even try to even act like I got it all together. I am so human. Oh, God. Oh, baby, I'm so human. I found out, I saw more of my insecurities at depth. And see, what's so empowering about that is power in surrender, and it's power in knowing and recognizing who you are and what your defects of character are. And you have been showing me by your example all these years. And when you show me your defects of character, I'm more in touch with mine also. And so these sort of things have happened. And what's so wonderful about it, the husband has always been gentle and kind and understanding. And so he like gave me the love and the space that I needed to repair. And now, at least for today, we're good. And the only thing we have is a daily reprieve, contingent on our spiritual maintenance. And I think what had happened was, you know, I had gotten too full of myself. I really did. I kept getting all these wonderful promotions and all this wonderful external stuff is going on, you know, and all this upward mobility and, you know, and I probably had upward mobility myself, you know, I wasn't ready for it. And I had to come in here, and y'all had to teach me how to handle sobriety. And that's been the real honest deal. And I didn't want to come and talk about that today. I didn't want to talk about what I had been through over the last year, because I want to appear fabulous to you. I want you to know that I'm fabulous and that I'm on the block. But when you get up here, when I get up here and share, if I can't be honest, I'm going to suffer. Honesty is an absolute requirement for recovery. And I've had to get honest in a whole lot of areas that's been painful. It's y'all who have taught me about commitment, responsibility. Y'all. I've learned that from y'all. I have watched y'all go through trials and tribulations. I have watched y'all go through health issues and this issue and that issue. And I have watched you stick and stay and deal. And because of your example, I am what I am today. And you taught me about these resentments. And you know what they say about resentments. You know, you're the only one who feels it. And my sponsor taught me from the beginning. He said, Margaretta, anytime you get a resentment, use that serenity prayer right away. You're in trouble anytime you entertain a resentment. And I come in here and I found out no matter what you do to me, I have the responsibility to let it go and give it to the higher power. And my sponsor used to say, Margaretta, give it to God. Give it to God. He wants to work. Why are you struggling with it? And I found out that even if you harm me, even if you do something without me doing anything to you, I have a responsibility not to take what you did to me originally, which may have been a wrong, and keep re-injuring myself with it with a resentment. That's my responsibility. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me that. If I hold on to a resentment, I'm telling you, I've come to understand it more deeply. It affects my entire psyche. It attacks me physically. Resentments are so cancerous. They break down the immune system. They do everything. And I want to hold on to that when all I got to do is say, take it, God, you got it. You got it. But sometimes I got to say that over and over and over and over and over again because I have a built-in forgetter. And sometimes, let's face it, sometimes I just like being in a resentment. Sometimes I like to think about, ugh, and just hate you to death, you know, until I get so sick I've got to let it go. So, you know, y'all been giving me these wonderful jewels all my life, talking about you got to let it go, Margaretta. You can't afford it. You can't afford to be resentful. It won't work for the alcoholic. Leave it for other people. And our literature talks about it. Our program talks about it. Other men and women maybe can handle certain things. As an alcoholic, I can't handle it. I can't get involved in any sort of controversy because it takes me into a place where I get sick. Now, see, I love to have a wonderful debate on this and that, you know, on this issue, on that issue. You know, I can't even do that shit. I got to let all that go. I can't even get involved in that because I'm too sick. I'm too sick. I have to have singleness of purpose, and that is to build a relationship with the higher power, to let go and let God, to keep it simple, to do service. And now I pray, please, Lord, don't let me be educated beyond my understanding. And I know that crap has happened. And I'm like, girl, don't forget what you are. Put all that stuff aside. You know you were drunk and you know you're sick. You know you better be here and you know you better keep the focus on this disease because I got all involved in education and women's issues and this issues and that issues and nearly lost my mind trying to be an intellect. Oh, gosh. I have to leave that for people who can handle it. And what it did was it showed me that it reminded me where God had put me. God put me here to be of service to him, not to be of service to me and my issues and what I think is right. My higher has given me a gift that he wants me to use very specifically. Not the way I want to use it, but the way he gives it to me to use. And every time I try to deviate away from that gift and try to, you know, do it another way, it doesn't work. And finally, it's like, boing, yoing, yoing, yoing. Oh, God, I got it. Gotcha, God. Gotcha. And when I'm doing service, oh, God, it's so wonderful. I need service. I'm not going to lie. I be patrolling for newcomers. Watch me. I be patrolling for them to save my own life. Because without service, I'm very sick. I'm very sick without service. If I don't have a drunk to work with, if I don't have a purpose by way of the higher power, I'm sick. Then I'm wrapped up in me and, oh, my hair. Oh, am I too fat now? Oh, God. I'm comparing, I'm looking, you know, I'm critiquing. Oh, God, I get very sick. I remember when I was, when I first came in, you know, I still had my Black Marilyn Monroe look going on. It had been tapered, but it was still going on, right? And I remember my teenage daughter at that time, I was in the mirror primping and like, oh, it's not right. And she said, Mommy, are you trying to look like me? I was like, oh, my God, I am. I mean, what an awakening. The awakenings have come slowly but wonderfully. And if I cannot take them so personally, like today, I hope that young person is in the room today who really called me on my stuff. And the young person was absolutely right. You know, this is an anonymous program. And so we were by the pool, and I took some pictures of the grandchildren in the pool. And then I said, well, let me take a few pictures of that banner up there. And this young person said, Miss, this is an anonymous program. Please don't take pictures. And I was like, okay. But then I got like, oh, my God, I'm supposed to be the older member. She had to tell me, oh, my God. And I got sick for a moment, right? Then I had to pray to God like hell. Oh, please, Lord, don't let me get a resentment. Don't let me get a resentment. Let me let it go. Let me not carry this. Okay, thank you, young person. See, we all need one another. And she reminded me about the singleness of purpose and that, it is an anonymous program. But, you know, I wanted to go back to New York and show my pictures. You know how that goes. So I'm constantly learning. I'm constantly being fed. But will I hold myself open to receive all the gifts that are waiting right there for me? See, that's my job, to be in waiting, the same way I used to wait for my man. You know, come on home, baby. I got to hold myself in waiting for the higher power to bless me and to give me and to send me and put me where the higher power wants me to be. And I'm telling you, that journey is much more fabulous than any journey I can conjure up. And, you know, my imagination can really conjure up. And so what recovery has done is it's reducing me more and more. I even find now I'm not even as flamboyant, at least not today. I'm not as flamboyant as I have been in even speaking, because something is happening. I'm being reduced. I'm being stripped. And that's a good thing. I want to be stripped. I want to be as much as I'm supposed to be like me as I can be. So what does that mean? That means I need the 12 steps and 12 traditions in my life. That means that I need a home group, and I need a sponsor, and I need to be working with others. That means that I can't be too busy. I can't say, no, I got to do this. I got a paper. I got to do this. I got to, when any time the hand of AA, you know, reaches out, I got to be there to extend my hand. I have to be available to my home group. I have to be willing to show up at business meetings. And like as my sponsor taught me, said, Margareta, you must make business meetings, because if you don't, the newcomer will take over. He said the newcomer cannot take over until they have 12 steps and 12 traditions. He said, because if you let the newcomer take over and you turn the responsibility of the group over to the newcomer might put the old timer out. So it's your responsibility to be there to pass the message on. So this is what I'm learning more and more since I've been here, is the responsibility of each individual to the whole. Nobody has it. You know, I am a collective of everyone who's in here. You are me and I am you. And God has put me in places and I have met people who are so unlike me. But yet, they are just like me. And where else would I have gotten something like that? No place but like Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I did my fifth step with my sponsor reminded me of the spiritual team. I must have a spiritual team of myself, another person, and the higher power. It must be the spiritual team. Of course, God, as we talk about in the steps, God knows everything about me, but it's much better when I also talk about me with another closed-mouthed person. This way, I can hear myself, and this way, a person can share with me, and maybe I can hear where maybe I'm going astray. When I start locking down, then I'm in trouble. And then this thing about making the lists and making amends and it's, and why? Why do I have to make amends? Because I want freedom. I want freedom. I don't want the pressure in my head anymore. I want freedom. So I'm willing to make all amends as they come up. And why do I have to continue to take inventory? And when I'm wrong, properly admit it? Because I need peace in my soul. And the only way that I can get peace in my soul is to promptly admit when I'm wrong. And now I do it. I do it because I don't want the headaches anymore. I want to have peace inside my soul. And then you're telling me that I have to constantly build this relationship with a higher power. And it truly is. And our big book talks about the solution, in essence, the 12 steps and 12 traditions are supposed to lead me into a relationship with a higher power or a God of my understanding. That's the whole hit of the program, to lead me into a relationship, and I'm supposed to build on that and keep trying to make the relationship more deeper. How much am I going to rely on the higher power? Am I willing to rely on the higher power? Not all the time, I can tell you that. And I think that's what makes the alcoholic, that, at least for me, that I don't always rely on the higher power many times until I am on fire. And then I say, oh, my God, I want you, higher power. Please, please put this fire out inside of me. And then it tells me that I must pass this message on. What message is that? The message of 12 steps and 12 traditions. The message of freedom. The message of that I don't have to pick up the first drink no matter what's going on in my life, good, bad, or indifferent, and that I'm going to keep showing up for the healing that's in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I mean, we really got healing in the rooms of AA. There's something magnificent to come into a room of AA sick in the mind, dejected, emotionally just completely lost, not know what's going on, and walk into a room of AA and allow myself to be touched, to be healed by the words, by your share, and the laughter, and to get the, and you know, I know I'm always getting better when I'm able to laugh, to let the laughter come into my soul, because many times I take myself far too serious. I get too serious. And we have some old timers in New York, and they talk about, you know, hey, don't take yourself so serious. You're too serious. And so where am I at today? What's going on with me today? I'm trying to be better with me. We have the grandchildren with us. Now, you know, we get a reprieve. I wasn't available for my children back then. I mean, I was there, but I wasn't there. You know what I'm trying to say. I wasn't available. And now I get a chance to be available for my grandchildren. That's a blessing. And I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I just keep showing up. That's all I do. I try to show up, and I try to do the right thing. I don't say I do the right thing. I try to do the right thing. I try to take the next right action. What's that? Some days the next right action is to just pick up the banana peel off the floor. Sometimes it's as simple as that. Because I was the type of drunk, I didn't clean no house. That was out. I didn't clean. but I look good. And as long as I can look good, I was good. So now we have our grandchildren for a month, and y'all have loved the grandchildren that have been here, and y'all have been wonderful, and I thank y'all for that. And so we're here. We're trudging the road. And what do I want? I want to just keep building my relationship with the higher power. I don't want any more. I want what my higher power wants for me. I don't want any more stuff, because I don't have nowhere to put it anyway. I don't want no more stuff. I don't want none of that stuff anymore. I just want peace, the peace that passes all understanding that only Alcoholics Anonymous can give me, because Alcoholics Anonymous leads me into the relationship with the higher power, and when I'm in sync with the higher power, I'm at peace, and that's what it's all about. I want to thank Gopher State again. I mean, you have done such a magnificent job. And to year after year bring people, this amount of people back together, bring people together, new people, people who've been here, keep coming back for healing, keep coming back to be with one another. We keep coming back so we can share the stories, we can see how each other is doing. This is magnificent. And so, you know, I'm grateful. I'm very grateful. And so I ask, as you know, I always say, just keep coming back. Just keep coming back. Let go, let God, keep it simple. And when I share, I'm not telling you as much as I'm telling myself. These are the things that I must do if I want to remain a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in good standing. So I love you all, and anytime you come into New York, look up the St. Nicholas group. Thank you, Gopher State, and I love you all.